Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Propaganda is brought to you with Levi Solicitors. There's a 10% discount on legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. 15% on conveyancing instructions received before the end of January 2022. Dan, Michael, and Moscow with you. Usual three in the studio, on YouTube, and in your podcast app as well. And Propaganda is the show where we find out what's been said about Leeds United in reaction to the most recent game, both by you and by the opposition fans. West Ham away, FA Cup, stuff what came into us. First half of this is then the feedback from Leeds fans and our TSB Plus members who gave us their feedback on what we said on the match ball, their thoughts on the game, and the stadium came in for quite a lot of stick. So let's take some cheap shots at West Ham for their stadium.
Well,
Who oversaw the move to that stadium, by the way?
Well, yes. I mean, it was free. That's the thing. I'm a cheap man. And I can look at it and go, well, it's not great, but it was cheap.
You went to see late stage Guns N' Roses in this stadium, didn't you? Which was better, Guns N' Roses with Axl absolutely ruined, or this game on Sunday?
He was in his Thomas Brolin phase. Was Axl at the time?
In case anyone has missed the meeting on this, it was Angus Kinnear who was in charge of West Ham moving from the beloved Berlin ground in the heart of the local community.
I thought you were going to say the Bellingerin then. Bellinger Carlisle.
The Bellinger Carlisle ground to some free athletic stadium in the middle of nowhere next to a shopping centre. So we can only hope that when it comes to Elland Road's redevelopment, Kinnear remembers all that he did during that process.
Do not want an athletics track.
Does none of it. Yeah, that it's a big tick list of things not to do in Yorkshire.
Unless it's free. We'll take
even if it's free, no. I don't want an athletics track and I don't want to be looking on admittedly, I wasn't there, I was here, but the photos of the flat roofs were bad enough.
Because they were sort of singing and dancing about the getting the seats closer to the touch lines and the goal line, weren't they? Saying, we've listened to your feedback and we've put seats in, and they have, but what they've done is they've created a massive void behind the seats now in front of the scoreboards where it's just like someone described it as a tennis court, didn't they? It was that big.
I mean, if you could sing and dance on them, great, because it's a big surface. You could have a roller rink there, but as it is, it's an impractical, just blank space.
It does weird things with your head because I think you imagine that to be a smaller space than it is from the perspective of the photos, but then you see the people and you realise this is a huge space. These are like five-a-side pitch.
Moscow's roller disco thing is the closest thing I've seen to it because it's got barriers all around the edges. It's a smooth, flat surface. Get people going around, double your income. Like Ken Bates was always about income streams, wasn't he?
And with the stadium. Charlton did it for a while during the lowest point of their regime. So you had at one end of the stadium was people throwing tennis balls on the pitch trying to get the game called off. But then in one corner, they had a sofa where competition winners got to watch the game while sitting on a couch. You could turn that flat roof area, if a roller rink is somehow considered impractical by the health and safety police, then do it like an everyman cinema where it's big comfortable seats, like big sofas that you can sink into and watch the game. But just having that big blank area isn't good.
You don't really see this on TV that much, do you? I think which is probably the key to it, is that they've come up with a solution and gone, will it look really crap on telly? And they're like, no, because of the angles, you probably won't see it too much. But when you actually see it from the angle of paying supporters, Jesus Christ.
I mean, it's bad, isn't it?
It's Someone had tweeted with a picture of why it looks like this, and
it's Nathan LUFC Lamb who tweeted this out.
Yeah, you can see it's basically just a big platform they built over the proper seats.
The athletic seats are underneath it, aren't they?
Yeah, just don't play in an athletic stadium. I almost feel this is worse than just playing in an athletic stadium and accepting a big running track. Is this weird expanse of just plastic? Like, I don't know what it is.
I mean,
plastic pavings, I think, is what it is.
None of this is going to be news to West Ham's fans, is it? They all know. No. They don't particularly like it as a stadium. But it's weird, isn't it, how since the move there, it's coincided with the real uptick in their fortunes, which is bizarre in itself. But yeah, it is an awful ground.
You are so far from the opposite end. I mean, the picture is from N11 Whites that I put on the prep sheet, and you genuinely can hardly see the far end of the pitch from there. It's ridiculous.
Is it just me? Is it just that photo that's squashed, or is the angle of the seats really shallow as well? Because football stadiums tend to go more vertical than that, don't they? I know there's obviously a maximum allowable angle for health and safety reasons or whatever, but it does feel like a very, very smooth gradient, does that? It's almost like it's an athletic stadium.
At least we don't have to play there on the regular, obviously.
We are at the moment.
At the moment, yes, we are. But yeah, I think it's done some weird things to their support as well, which we will come on to in a bit.
Yeah, it's been gentrified, hasn't it, essentially? But I guess that's what happens when you move to a big posh shopping centre. In terms of the football then, what do people say? Lack of creativity and frontman. Is that like the difficult third album or whatever it is? When the band starts to go to shit.
I mean, the difficulty they're talking about here is...
It's a difficult second album,
is that Greenwood had difficulty playing as our number nine, because maybe he's not suited to it. And the good news is...
he won't be doing that now.
He won't be doing that again.
No.
Yeah, and Ender saying that he thought the comments on Greenwood were spot on, that he had no support and he's not a number nine. And comparing him to Antonio, who is incredibly good at it. He's like ridiculously good at it, considering he was a fullback for half his career and then a winger for a bit of it. And then they've gone, actually, you could probably just play up front, couldn't you? And he just seems to have grasped it really quickly.
It is a real symptom of this season, I think, that we've looked on many, many occasions quite toothless without Bamford. So... good luck with that for the rest of the season and all that. Not to be too bleak about it, because we understand there's an injury crisis going on, but I think can we accept that this squad has not stood up that well to the rigours of the season? And I know this is always with the aid of hindsight, but, you know, we're going back to a point we've made loads, haven't we, that's been said lots over the last 3 years.
Were you predicting 10 players out at once in summer?
No, but people
were you predicting all four strikers to be injured reserve striker to be injured? How many strikers did you want?
But equally, we can't pretend that there weren't plenty of people saying, God, that squad looks really, really thin. And I think it's also the fact that if you do start to get injuries, that what you're falling back on is kids who are like Greenwood. I know we'd never anticipate being four strikers down, which is absolutely insane.
So you can't have a go at somebody for not anticipating it. If you can never anticipate it.
What I'm saying
they should have been prepared for something that nobody would have anticipated.
But lots of people did. The fan base did. Everyone said
nobody anticipated all four strikers being injured at once.
We're not doing this again. No, they didn't. But everyone said that the squad was lacking quality or too thin. Well, not everybody, that's not fair. A large proportion of people aired their fears, and unfortunately those fears have been proved right this time, but not in previous seasons.
Nobody was frightened of losing all four strikers at once, though.
I think people were frightened, however, of saying that is Tyler Roberts a good enough backup?
And he's
which
not.
Which he has been.
Which, well...
Well, no, he doesn't score, does he?
He doesn't score. But if you look at his, and then Gelhart, we kind of have now got some faith in, but at the start of the season, you wouldn't have necessarily been able to say he was one of our main strikers. And Greenwood was nowhere near.
So no, nobody predicted the exact set of circumstances, but it was just people generally airing fears about the depth and the quality in the squad. And unfortunately, an extraordinary injury crisis has meant that we have been left
so
quite
they've
short.
Been proved right by incredibly extreme... unforeseeable circumstances.
No, I think people were worried about Bamford being injured was the top and bottom of it, because people didn't think there was enough quality underneath him.
Which is a fair point.
Brought about by one injury, not by... Obviously, it's made worse by the fact that we have layered injury upon injury. But I think that was the main fear.
Wasn't it midfield was the main fear? I don't remember
striker. But we're talking about strikers now. I think people did say we might need more strikers.
Well, why don't you tell us what we're allowed to... predict or say that people thought, and then we'll agree that you were right. Well,
I don't see the value in hindsight of saying that something that was absolutely unforeseeable proves people right, and then so what?
I think a lot of people have said that we haven't got
enough strength in depth,
enough quality backup for Bamford. I think a lot of people said that over summer.
And so what?
So if we had another striker, it would be better now.
We sit and talk about it. We're in the transfer window. We might as well just shut it all down. Let's talk about how well the youngsters did or didn't do as well, because West Ham Ralph said they did all right. Jack wasn't so convinced.
Yeah, Jack's saying the gulf between under 23s and first team football, which is, yeah. I mean, I thought Helder did very well. Bate was fine, I thought.
Didn't really see enough to kind of make a judgment on him, but he looked tidy enough, didn't he?
Yeah, it's very difficult for him to come into this team as well, because it's not like you're dropping. If you just drop Bate into an otherwise full strength Leeds team, he probably looks better than he did there. But as it is, he's coming into a patched up team without a real focal point, without Rafinha to give the ball to. It's kind of harder for him. But I thought overall they all did all right.
Yeah, they were in a difficult position because it's right down the middle, isn't it? Striker, midfield, defender. We had a child in each one, and then the second half when Firpo went off, and there were only so many places Dallas could be at once, and so Cody Drammers at right back. We did get better because the circumstances of the game meant West Ham wanted to defend their place in the fourth round, and we had a little bit more momentum as it went on, but that's just kind of like end of a cup tie situation rather than Drammer and Somerville being game changers, although Somerville played very well when he came on.
Yeah, on the kind of shoehorning of people into positions as well against Burnley, we mentioned how we managed to make subs without Dallas moving. West Ham, Ralph pointing out in this one, we had to move Dallas twice.
Yeah.
So he did the three positions in this game.
And there's Rafinha as well, who ended up in central, he was in deep line central midfield at one point in that second half. I think when we made one, I've lost track of all the subs, there were so many, but we seemed to sort of sacrifice the midfield position and just start pushing forward. But then Rafinha was dropping back and trying to pick up the ball and make stuff happen from deep. And his influence has gone off the boil a little bit. Nathan and Nathaniel, presume they're different people, have flagged this one up, saying his influence has waned a little bit in recent weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And people have wanted to see him play centrally as well. And it didn't really work.
There's a difference, I think, though, between being tucked in behind the front man and then and being where Adam Forshaw normally is.
And the whole thing would become a bit of a shambles by then because everyone had moved. I think we underestimate how difficult it is probably to have the end team on the pitch as entirely different. Everyone in different positions, completely different personnel, all reshuffled from the start. It's probably not
and that is not that easy to just adjust. The argument against the five subs, which is what you made on the match ball, actually, Moscow, is like changing half a team. It changes the complexion of the game completely.
And it only really benefits clubs like Liverpool and Manchester City, who have another full team of internationals and expensive players on the bench, which Jurgen Klopp thinks is an absolute sickening outrage that he should have to consider ever using. But actually, it's fine, as long as they're not all, you know, pretending they've got COVID.
And the other thing with overlooked when people like Klopp are moaning about it as well, is that these are clubs that have been at the top of the league for years, so they've got a really, really well-funded youth system. So it's not even comparable to our youth system, because we've essentially tried to pick this up from scratch a few years ago, where it had been massively underfunded. Loads of players from the area have been recruited to Man City and like Man United and Liverpool, taken across there all of the best players. So we've had to try and build this up from scratch. And as you can see, our actual under-23s, the ones who are breaking through, Cresswell aside, are basically people we've bought. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we've had the development of this in the same way as someone like Liverpool.
Yeah, another 5 years might
Klopp
be different.
Klopp can shut up, basically. Did you see him moaning at a journalist this week? Because someone asked him about his injury crisis he had last season. He just completely went off at him. I mean, it was a bit of a daft question, but don't be a dick.
Marcelo's not a dick, is he? And he's the gold standard and all that. The FA Cup itself was mentioned by a few people. Joe lamenting, I think as we were in the run-up to this, that it's a shame we don't give a shit about the FA Cup. But then John P does come in saying, who gives a shit about the FA Cup anyway? The magic of the Cup is Kidderminster beating boring Reading. Mind you, you've seen the draw for the fourth round, of course. Kidderminster, West Ham, it would have been us going to Kidderminster
and losing a
banana skin. Mm. But again, it is terribly defeatist, isn't it, that we even had to think that the Leeds United fear can grip us in such a way. But
I mean, in a different season, like last season, it's a shame that we went out to Crawley, not just the way we did, but at all, because we were in a much more comfortable situation. And it felt like, oh, let's have a cup run and use the momentum that we had off the back of promotion and in the season that we had, see how far we could go in a cup. This season, it's not the time for a cup run. And it's just kind of, and Kidderminster are there to beat us had we got through. Like, that's absolutely the lowest ranked team left in the competition, sixth tier, Kidderminster. It's their place as well, isn't it? So it just, we know that
they play in all red like Crawley did as well. It's just too many. It's too close to home.
Yeah, we know that would have been on TV and we know we would have lost that game. So there are some seasons where it's best avoided, and it's a shame as well with it being 50th anniversary of the one time when we did win the FA Cup. So the poetry and the romance was all there for us to do it again in 2022. But frankly, sod it. It doesn't matter. And especially, I think as well, we lost a bit from having to play West Ham when we had them in the league as well. I think that took something from it too, because it just turned into kind of a rehearsal for the weekend.
That's not as important as that one. Mm. The VAR and the refereeing, we sort of did to death on the match ball. A lot's been said about it. We probably don't need to retread all the same points. One of the things that was brought up on the live televised games over the weekend, I think, was it Lineker discussing this with, it was Alan Shearer, wasn't it, on the BBC, saying that only 9 of the 32 third round games were using VAR. Is that right?
It seems
do you care?
It seems daft not to use it when it's there, I suppose, doesn't it? It's like saying if we're going to be wrong, we'll be consistently wrong. I mean, I would get rid of it in all FA Cup ties and all
Premier League
ties and all World Cup and Euros, etc. Just because I think that decision highlighted why it's annoying, because you have to get doubly annoyed, whereas it's better if that was just given as a goal normally, you would look back at it and you go, oh well, yeah, it probably was offside, but you know, it all happened really quick. There's people running across from various angles.
We've been done by human error.
There's a touch of the defender, you know, you've got a linesman and a referee trying to keep an eye on all this at once. Like, you can accept it's more or less impossible. Whereas when someone's gone and watched it for like 3.5 minutes and then come back and goes, oh yeah, goal.
And tried to find a reason to not rule it out, we're getting into all that. It's all down to terminology and wording, isn't it? Like, the clear and obvious error becomes the test.
Although for offsides, it's not a clear and obvious error. It's a technical decision as an offside.
Oh, is it? I mean, yeah, again, but it just seems such a faff. Like, so you're telling me that is an easier or a better system than a human error in real time, human eyes, you know, looking across the pitch, the ref also there, there's two of them. Okay, fine, they didn't manage to keep up with it. We've been done out of a goal there. But then you've got computers, lines, people sat in a room. How much does it cost? Was it 18, 19 grand? Henry Winter broke the cost out. It's 9 grand, isn't it? Sorry, split between the both clubs. I was thinking half the cost.
Is it 9 grand per club? I can't remember.
Something, whatever it is.
They have to pay to have it switched on.
Too expensive. It just seems stupid, doesn't it, that they can still not do the obvious. He's offside.
We'll hear from West Ham fans who disagree.
What, think he's onside?
So,
but they would, because it's benefited them. I guess that's what football fans do, isn't it?
But are we on the other side of that? I mean, no, I think it's offside. Right. Well, I think we are. I didn't hear any ex-professionals saying it wasn't offside.
It's also the utter pedantry of it, which for some reason seems to have been really ramped up in the FA Cup matches. They seem to spend a lot longer on our decision, and then the scum game against Aston Villa when they were ruling out the Villa goal and took 3.5 minutes over it. There haven't been many times in Premier League matches that I'm aware of where it's taken that long to rule a goal out. And the Villa one, where they went from is such and such offside, has such and such touched the ball right here, to suddenly they're looking at somebody blocking Cavani on the edge of the penalty area. And so it was kind of like they were working backwards through every possible way of ruling it out. And I think with what I wrote in the report about our game, was it felt like if VAR hadn't been switched on for the West Ham game, that assistant referee has to make the decision. And I think they probably give it offside and no goal, because it then took so long to work out that there'd been this tiny little touch and all the things to work out that they didn't want it to stand, or that they thought it should not stand, that it should stand, that it seems the on-pitch decision felt much more likely to disallow it.
Should they set a time limit then, or should they just do away with it?
I've always thought the best use of VAR would be they get the people in the Stockley Park get to watch it again, and if they can't make their mind up, you just carry on. So they get one more look or a time limit or whatever, rather than spending 3.5 minutes. I was half interested in the scum game last night, the second half at least, because I've been watching the under-23s. But when that was gone, I turned it off. It's like, I'm not interested in sitting here watching people stand, because that's all anybody was doing, was just standing about. And, you know, I've no sympathy for people who choose to go to Old Trafford and watch a football match, but there's no screens in there, so there's nothing for them. There's no information to fans in Old Trafford as to what's going on, because the place is so laughably awful that it doesn't even have a television. And all that stuff just becomes incredibly boring. If there was a time limit where they just have to go, right, you've got 20 seconds to work out if there's a problem, and then you carry on. But
I quite like the original time limit referees had, which was just doing it then. Your time limit's about 2 seconds to look at something and you go, yep, That's a given. That's a free kick, not a free kick.
I don't mind another angle, because I think that's the benefit of replays, is you get to see another angle that isn't available to the referee. So you can say, we sometimes talk about it when we're imagining the communication coming from Stockley Park. You need, if they're watching the game on TV screens, they can go, oh, did you see him punch him? He'd be like, no, right, you need to give a free kick. That kind of stuff that the referee hasn't got a clue of being able to see. But I think what happened in our game at West Ham is that the assistant didn't give a decision because they know VAR is there and they'll go through it with a fine tooth comb to find whatever they can find. So they just keep the flag down and don't get involved and leave it up to them. And I think it should be down to the make a sodding decision.
I think the problem with the time limit would be that if you set it for like 20 seconds or 30 seconds, you don't get to see every replay. It might be that just after that 30 seconds, TV are then showing a more conclusive angle, and then everyone's going, oh, well, if they'd waited another 10 seconds, they'd have got that right.
A minute, let's say. I know we're just plucking arbitrary figures here, but a minute rather than, let's say, 3.5 is the point, isn't it? Like, if you can't make a decision within a minute, then just on-field decision stands.
You get a slow-mo. A couple of angles from a slow-mo to see if you can spot anything that needs looking at.
Because how many of us sat here, and the same applies to the listener as well, sat there and hadn't formed a judgment based on the first replay within about 20 seconds?
Yeah. And also, it came down to that it distorts what they're actually looking at, because they ended up making that decision somehow on it being that tiny little touch and who got the toe on the ball, which then obliterates the principle, which was Jarrod Bowen was offside and he went for the ball.
Mm. Yeah, that should have been enough. End of story. Yeah.
So you don't need long to look at that. And the linesman not making that decision, he was offside and he went for the ball, challenging the goalkeeper.
Which is what the human decision on field is.
Yes.
That's what they do. They see, oh, he was offside at that moment.
And then we get this inhuman, well, if we freeze frame it exactly there, we can see a toe touching the ball that means somebody else. And it's...
I will say,
I
thought it was a bad decision. I don't think it particularly changed the outcome of the game.
No, we should say that. Yeah, they were the better side.
I mean, anything can happen, obviously, but I think they created the better chances.
Yeah.
But they didn't score them.
Well, no.
They did the second one.
They did the second one, yeah. I mean
their two best chances. One, they scored from cheating, and then the other one, we scored... We cleared it off the line when the ball had gone out for a goal kick anyway, and they just played on with that one, and we had to clear it off the line. Other than that, I mean...
Ryan Fredericks one was quite funny, actually. I watched that one back. I think there were like six people in the box, actually, all unmarked and waiting for him to cross it, and instead he just shot from a ridiculous angle.
But that's West Ham's like daft decision-making and a combination of... It was a drab old game, and it wasn't very fun or interesting. We weren't very good, and probably West Ham deserved to win. But they didn't batter us. They weren't...
No.
There wasn't like... It wasn't never going to be a 4-0 or anything like that. And I think had that goal not gone in before half time, we're out for the second half with Rafinha on and Dallas on, and maybe we have more about us at 0-0 than we do at 1-0 down, because West Ham just had to sit back. They had the lead, so they weren't too troubled.
Just to close out the stuff on the ref, Philip quite separately picks out the divers, and we mentioned it on the Match Ball. It's not unique to West Ham by any stretch of the imagination. Wolves were at it earlier in the season, and I spoke on the Match Ball about how a lot of Premier League teams know how to basically play the refs, don't they? And I think that's one thing that across this season and since we've returned to the Premier League, I found really, really hard to stomach, and does make you hate the game more. When you see a big shithouse like Antonio going down and you see the decision given on the edge of the area, you know, was it Vlasic who went down? Oh, well, he slipped, didn't he?
I mean, the Vlasic one was ridiculous. You could see from the fairly distant TV picture, people on the back row of overlooking the ice rink or whatever it was could probably see that there'd been no contact there. And it was one of those that immediately we all went, get up!
Yeah.
And then you show a replay and there was actually less contact than I thought. I imagine there'd been a slight brush.
Yeah.
But actually there was nothing.
We all know, anybody who's ever played football at any level or you've watched it over a sustained period of time, you know what it takes to knock a person off their feet when you're playing football. And that's not it, is it?
And that's where it's frustrating as well, because then VAR has to sit on their hands having seen that he's gone down under no contact while we set up a wall and they're like, they're now going to have a shot at goal, which we know they shouldn't be able to have, but because that's not within the remit of VAR, it's just, get rid.
It's just shite. They've just...
I think that's part of the frustration is that you can go through with so closely on some decisions and then something like that just doesn't get touched, and it kind of... It only adds to the unfairness that if a replay can show a player is has got a free kick for nothing, then but, why? And again, that's one of the things that, you know, if all it takes is one replay for the ref, for the assist, the VAR referee to say, oh no, he didn't touch him, drop ball.
The one you mentioned where the ball had gone out and we cleared it off the line, I think that ended up in a corner. And if they'd have scored from the corner, if they'd have scored from that, it would have been disallowed and we'd have had a goal kick. If they'd have scored from the corner, that'd have been fine.
Yeah.
And that's, so it's kind of how far back you go. And
well, that's where I think, so building up, maybe a time limit is the wrong thing, but the VAR being just a second set of eyes so that they are in the ear of the referee at all times, the same as the assistants on the linesman as was, help the referee by saying, oh, that ball went out, you need to give it the other way. Mm. Because that's all it would have to be on the one where we cleared it off the line and they got a corner, is you just need to, as it's happening, to say, no, the ball was over the line, that should be a goal kick. And then you say, all right, it's a goal kick. You don't need to go, okay, I'm getting a message from elsewhere, from the other place, and now I'm going to go and have a look at it over here. Just trust the guy in your ear to say, oh, that shouldn't have been a free kick, and or he's absolutely, he's you missed it, but he's taking his legs out there.
I think they are doing that, you know. I think they are giving them in ear, but we never find out, and there's no accountability, and that's the frustration. I think they are, because you see, like, the referees just doing that with the finger in the ear, but they're on an FBI stakeout during the game. I suspect they are giving them assistance as it goes.
Well, then, but West Ham shouldn't have had that corner.
But they're not telling us, but they're only telling them on certain things.
Yeah.
And they made it harder for the linesman, because from the linesman's point of view, he's thinking, well, I don't want to put my flag up to say it's gone out, because if it hasn't, if it's just stayed in by a centimetre and then they cross it and score and I've already put my flag up to say it's gone out.
And Leeds have stopped, and there's all a subconscious thing going on.
Exactly.
There?
There's lots of different, if you think you've got a fallback, then you will sometimes take it, but sometimes the fallback will result in a less.
That's what I was on about on the match ball, saying like they've tied themselves up in knots with all the different permutations and the psychological implications of actually just doing your job at that particular moment.
They've made a difficult job a lot worse.
Do you know, it felt like in the Euros, everyone's saying like the Euros were refereed and VAR'd a lot better. It felt like in the Euros, the refs were reffing the game and the liners were doing the lines jobs as well. Mm. And then VAR was sort of just there hovering in the background if they needed it. Whereas it feels with this like it's almost omnipresent. And actually the Burnley game, to go back a week before that, it didn't feel omnipresent. Mm. And maybe it's different when you're inside the stadium compared to watching it on TV, because it's a TV experience, I guess. It's the same as the VAR refs get it, isn't it? That it didn't feel present at all against Burnley, whereas it felt like it was completely overbearing against West Ham and it was just around the corner waiting to ruin everything. Mm. I don't know.
And it did.
Yeah. Well, but as you said, we can't pretend that was the single
and
cause.
And let's not pretend it didn't ruin it for West Ham fans a bit as well, because they all celebrated a goal, then they had to sit there for 3 minutes looking at a screen waiting for it to say goal on it before they could actually go. The bubbles were probably already out.
I think they were probably watching people skating around, weren't they? Instead in front of the scoreboards. Just to wrap up the other stuff then that's come in, Missing Teeth does suggest that Marcelo removes the bear traps from Murder Ball. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that should prevent some of the injuries. Jordan suggesting that Bamford goes to Forshaw's magic hip doctor. I mean, Forshaw, was he not out for the best part of a year after he went to the hip doctor in Colorado?
It's fixed him, yeah, but we do need Bamford back.
So we'll have him back in a year then, if we...
A bit sooner. I mean, Marvin wants us to talk about crisps.
No.
No?
No, not doing that.
Okay.
Let's talk about ITV's commentary instead, which we picked out on the match ball as well. It wasn't great, was it? And I think this goes back to what we were saying about, was it during lockdown, about the standards of it all?
I think we had a go at Matterface during the Euros as well.
There's just so much. I mean, Matterface, I think, stands alone as an example because of his style of commentary. I think rubs a lot of people up the wrong way. If you like it, fine. I'm not going to sit in judgment. Don't particularly, with his tripping out loads of facts. Interesting how they've matched him up with Ali McCoist on ITV, I think, because Ali McCoist is really widely liked as a co-commentator because he's got such enthusiasm and it feels really, really natural. Whereas you always feel like Matterface is going to be trotting out a line about, you know, a pun or a stat from 5 years ago or something like that.
It was Seb Hutchinson in our game.
Scrooge McHutch who sent this in. I was just wondering, are they the same person? Because he kept getting names wrong. Glick was the one in particular that annoyed people. But I think it's because there's so much TV coverage these days as well. Maybe people are, as we were saying during lockdown, maybe a touch underprepared. Maybe just, you know, winging it a little bit.
I mean, ITV don't really have much football now, so they've got to kind of start it up again when they get the FA Cup games, whereas Sky or someone have got a constant churn of it, so they're more in the groove with it. As you get to the ITV a bit more, like, oh shit, we've got to actually show some football.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Part two of the show. This is where we find out what West Ham thought about the cup game on Sunday, and straight into West Ham TV then, is it, Michael?
Yeah, there was nothing much of interest, to be honest. They seemed a bit underwhelmed by the whole thing.
Like the game itself.
In much the same way as we were, yeah. They were like, yeah, it was a good win. But this is what they had to say.
Wasn't a classic. It's not one that you're going to watch in a few years' time and think, oh, I'd watch that again. But we got the job done. I think we had the better of the first half. We had the better chances. Leeds didn't really offer much, did they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a tough one because obviously they've got injuries and I think they've got a few COVID cases as well, haven't they? So I think they had a few under-23s, didn't they? Did they have a few of the youngsters out? So, you know, I didn't think they were going to offer much anyway, like once I see their lineups, I didn't know half of their players. But, fair play to Leeds. They hung in there.
That's the best that can be said.
It's kind of it. It was more or less what we said, though, wasn't it? We were like, yeah, you kind of saw the team and you went, well, probably not. But never mind, let's have a look at it. And we didn't get battered, did we?
Was one of those two guys the oi oi guy from last
that's
year?
That's just all Cockney. That's from the opening of the like intro to the show, is that?
Oi
oi. They did sound quite similar, these two, those two. So did say the Leeds fans were good, though.
But I've got to say, credit to Leeds fans today, though, like 9,000 come back.
Well, basically, apart from afterwards.
But... Yeah, well, afterwards, but yeah, we won't talk about
that's
that.
Football, innit?
Yeah, but... you know, but they brought 9,000 down to basically see, you know.
Yeah, 9,000 on bringing it down on a Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff. Fair play to them, you know.
They didn't stop all game, did they? They was loud. So, yeah, you know, fair play to the Leeds fans for making the journey down.
How does your Cockney accent compare to these, Moscow? I can't hear a Cockney accent without hearing your version of it in my head.
We did get a tweet saying how much people enjoyed your Dick Van Dyke impression.
I'm probably just as... Cockney as any of these people. What happened afterwards?
Yeah, I was just going to say what was.
Was there some thing? Afters?
There was some. That's football, wasn't it?
Did it get a bit tasty?
Some violence on the streets.
There was a pitch invasion, but it wasn't.
There was, yeah.
It wasn't a Leeds fan.
Was it a child?
No, it was two grown-ups.
A protester.
Yeah. I don't really know what they were doing.
One of them was wearing like very slimline running leggings, as if they come prepared, or maybe that's just what people wear nowadays in London.
Well, we're saying this almost on the anniversary of the Sheffield Wednesday 6-1 30 years ago, which you can check out on the Matchball 30, by the way. That's out on Wednesday the 12th. And do you remember the pitch invader there? That's what immediately sprang to mind. That was all because that was a lady protesting against her taxes, wasn't it? They showed her on ITV.
They did. This was not quite as glamorous. This was like a couple of drunk people. There were two, weren't there?
I don't know.
I think he didn't show it on TV, but yeah, I did come across this on some other footage. What people expect from doing this? I don't really know. But yeah, there was some bother.
Was it a bit naughty?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's some. It's
mentioned. He turned me fruit and vegetable over.
It was mentioned.
I was only trying to sell him some antiques.
I think someone had disrespected someone's mother or Trevor Brooking's wife, maybe, and it all kicked off.
That cult's been in the family for years.
I like it that they're all right with it. It's like, yeah, but I think that's probably something to do with the new stadium, that they're like, I felt nice having it kicking off outside the ground. At least something's happening. Christ, at least it's better than just going to bloody H&M or whatever across the way. Yeah,
a couple
some
of people
shoplifting has been going down.
A couple of people did message me in the wake of this who went to this and just said, one of which Ashley said, on the heroes and villains thing, you've got to nominate Upton Park as a hero in a roundabout way. So, because this is just different. It's a different club. It's a different experience. And our fans were singing to that effect, weren't they? Like, you're not West Ham anymore or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, we'll sold
your soul for this.
We'll get onto that in a bit.
Right, next one.
Hammers chat. This is this was from a watch along, and I, the top comment on YouTube just it made me laugh. So it's worth repeating. Grassam Upson. Of course. So, but in the early days of organised football, some railed against spectatorism. I wonder what they would make of a watch along. It's like dogging cubes, which I enjoyed an awful lot as a comment.
Which is why we won't do a watch along, will we? It's not for the best.
Probably not.
No.
I don't want people doing what I do, which is picking out little clips of us getting really upset. So, because I do the stuff that goes on watch alongs, I'm not saying I don't do it.
Yeah.
But I just don't want people to see it. It's my own private.
It's private, isn't it?
It's my own private upset. And if you do it in a stadium full of people, it doesn't seem as mad.
It's a shared experience then, isn't it?
Yeah. Because then everyone's doing it and it's like, it's fine.
There's no possibility of acting natural with a GoPro in your face.
There is that. But he had a go at, he was going through our team and he had a little go at saying Helder, which I enjoyed.
Saying what?
Helder.
Ailing Lorente Hage and Firpo.
That's completely broken him.
As the song goes, yeah. That's a control alt delete situation, that isn't it? Yeah.
Someone else, I didn't use any other clips of his, so I'll just drop him in here. Louis the 11th, is that right?
Yes.
Or it could be Xi. It could be a Chinese name. Who knows?
Is Louis with an X your mistake?
Yes, it is.
Right, okay. Well, that's pretty cool.
Because that does say Louis the 11th.
It does,
11th.
Yeah. It was an S. But this is some YouTuber at the game. So these two young lads who were kind of just going, they weren't West Ham fans. It seems to be a recurring theme. There are loads of people doing this.
Premier League tourists.
But he managed to nail Yelda, only to fall down on an easy one.
Melier. They've got Firpo, they've got a centre-back called...
Hjelde.
And Llorente, Luke Ayling. They've got Koch and Batty in the midfield.
Koch and Batty.
And then they've got Harrison, Klitsch, I was about to say Reece James, Dan James, and they've got a youngster Greenwood up front. The Greenwood up front's quite good, but they've got Dallas, Rafinha, Forshaw on the bench.
For Greenwood, if you're watching this, I've signed you on a couple of career modes, so respect. I know you. Keep what you're doing. Keep it tight.
I love it. They've also just completely decided that Greenwood's good.
He's
good on a computer game.
I'm going to say neither of them have seen him play ever. No. But they've decided. He is actually good.
But I like the fact that they're sort of sending it up as well. Like, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You know? Keep it tight.
But yeah, Batty.
Louis Batty.
I have to be honest though, because of, you know, growing up watching David Batty, when we got him, it did break my brain a bit because we spent years looking at the name Bates and then my childhood references was Batty, and he's in this sort of hinterland between the two.
I remember it when he used to play for us, it was very hard to type Tom Lees' surname without writing Leeds.
Yeah.
Your fingers naturally just go to it on the keyboard. I don't know if you found that, Moscow. It was just something I did every single time. I'm like, no.
Yeah, autocorrect with Lees was always an absolute nightmare. I mean, I'm always conscious that we are in glass houses with a big bag of stones when it comes to pronunciation, but
I just like the way he gave up on it.
Louis Batty is an absolute outstanding effort.
The young French starlet. What else have we got then? We've got
as part of their watch along. I think it was after the game. They did.
Did they do a watch along from inside the stadium?
Oh no! This was no. This the Louis the Louis G was that's separate. This is from we're back onto Hammers chat now. So they were doing a watch along after the game. They did a quick. I remember at halftime. I can't remember. They did a quick YouTube comments poll about whether it should have the goal should have stood or not. Different opinions to ours in the main.
It is a game of opinions,
but it is worth. I think it's probably worth hearing the other side of it because you also realised how little they actually cared about the decision.
We can hear the other side of it and then decide they were wrong.
Yes.
Gary says yes. Adam, yes. Clavitch, yes. Scarborough doesn't care. I'm a bit like that too. Sirs, Simon, yes, yes. Steve says no. Steve's the first one that says it's offside. Goal, goal, goal. Offside. Yes, goal. Let's have a little look. Goal, goal. Tight, but right. I like that face. Goal, goal, goal. Offside. Goal. Goal, goal, goal. Iron saying probably should have been ruled offside. Arthur saying if they check for offside, they should check for the foul. I agree with that one. Christian saying offside, but penalty. Tim saying offside. Iron X saying sort of the offside should have been a penalty. Scott saying a goal. Brad saying offside. Chippy saying wasn't a goal and should have been a pen.
A variety of opinions.
Most of them thought it was a goal, and then several mentioned the penalty, which we didn't notice, which is possible.
Because it was absolute nonsense.
Possibly because we've got a slight bias.
What penalty? I did
go back and watch it. Gelder does have a bit of a grip of him as he goes past, as he turns.
Just don't even indulge these bubble-blowing idiots waiting for penalty.
He had a similar Cockney accent to you.
And also, what kind of idiot is like, goal should have stood, but we'll have the penalty? Shut your mouth. Well, yeah, but why is he supporting West Ham, man? He should be on the Hearts train with the... He was Phil if he likes a claret.
He was dressed like a Cockney.
Exactly. He's a wannabe, isn't he?
Mm. Was he dressed like what, in his Pearly King?
I don't know. He just had like, he had a buttoned up polo shirt and slicked hair. He looked like a Cockney, I would say.
Well, sort of dressed like Peaky Blinders kind of vibe.
Frank Lampard core.
He dressed a little bit like I imagine the Rory Chelsea man does.
Right. Which is what? How do you imagine he dresses?
Like that. In a London-y Cockney way. But yeah, that was the end of them.
Great.
So Alex Griffin then. So we're now on to non-West Ham fan.
Okay.
Although he does have the name of a snooker player, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Mm, so he kind of fits in.
Or could have been one of those Bournemouth players.
Mm.
Maybe. Well,
the generic.
Yeah, generic.
Yeah.
Regen Bournemouth.
But he's an Ipswich fan. So he's gone to this game. He's turned up. You're looking at me. Why would you be confused? Of course, an Ipswich fan.
The world's very confusing, isn't it?
Isn't the guy who, isn't he called Ben? Who has long hair and came to all our games in the EFL and was a YouTuber.
I can't remember.
Was he not an Ipswich fan as well?
There was an Ipswich fan.
What is it about Ipswich Town?
Maybe it's a rebrand. Maybe this is a rebrand. You don't know.
No, they're not very good. Mm. But are they that bad that you'll just go, can't watch Leeds, see what, I'll drive around the country watching other games. Was it Benjamin Bloom? Is that his name?
Oh, yes. He does exist. I've come across him.
Yeah. And he's long hair and he kind of, because he's very reasonable, everybody sort of says, he knows what he's talking about. But he's an Ipswich fan, wasn't he? He was going to games. Basically, his thing was he'd go to a game and they'd sit in his car outside and be reasonable about it. So that was him. And now,
that's probably why he's never featured on this.
And now there's another Ipswich fan.
This one's a bit more. Thing.
Do you think they're mates? Do you think on the rare occasions when they both go to Portman Road, they're like,
these two won't be mates.
Sissing at each other like cats.
Alex, yeah. Alex Griffin's more of a Larry presence. He's a bit more of a lad. Him and his mates, I think they've got Stone Island on and they're like...
I'm right about the snooker thing, aren't I?
Busy boozing.
And snooker cue in his back pocket.
And what have you. He says carnage a lot. Whenever he was showing the footage from inside the ground.
Total carnage.
Like West Ham's, oh, it's carnage in here. I don't know. He's probably not a Cockney. I think he has got a weird Cockney twang from Ipswich. But
was it carnage in the Olympic Stadium?
No. You could very clearly see it was just a goal.
It was when...
Mo Farah did that running.
No, I was going to say the guy who his hamstring went and his dad had to help him over the line in 1992. That was carnage, wasn't it?
Yes.
Dennis.
Was it Devon Malcolm or someone else?
Something like that.
I can't remember. Trying to go back to like early 90s
in a different athletics. A different Olympic stadium at that.
Oh yeah, I mean it was not built then.
The Olympic stadium, they move it from city to city, don't they?
Yes. Well, I've seen the one they're doing in Qatar, which is going to be, they can pack it all up and take it somewhere else.
Some of the World Cup stadiums are like that, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's one of them. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's not an Olympic stadium though, is it?
No, I'm just saying you can make a pack-up stadium. It might work. Brentford looks like you could. I don't know whether you could or not.
They can
pack it up and take it back to the championship.
I'm on Pinterest. I've found 20 photographs of Olympic athletes crying. the most inspiring. I don't know if that's the sort of thing you wake up in the morning and you need to look at some photos of athletes crying to get you inspired for the day.
I want to look at people enduring the worst moments of their lives.
Mm.
Search.
Oh, excellent.
Anyway, what's this mock knee snooker player Griffin doing anyway?
Well, he's outside. Bear in mind, he's an Ipswich fan. He's gone to a West Ham game. He's outside the ground trying to interview West Ham fans. And this is what he finds. He interviews three sets of West Ham fans in total. This is the first.
I'm here with Luke.
Yeah,
we're outside the stadium.
Yeah.
West Ham leads today.
Yeah.
How are you feeling for this one?
Excited. I think West Ham could go on and do a job here today, man. I think West Ham should be looking to go on and win the FA Cup, to be fair. So
really?
Yeah, why not? Why not? We're in Europe. Leicester last season. Why not? Okay. Every club around that kind of would be thinking, why not? Let's go. This is time for us to go and get a title.
Yeah. So score prediction, what did you say?
I think we're going to get a lot of goals. I think West Ham 3-1.
Okay, who's going to score the goals?
Say Antonio double with maybe a Lanzini or Rice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to ask you one more question, mate. I ask everyone this question. You've told me off camera you're a Man United fan. I bet you're out there. So give me your favourite Man United chant.
Ooh. But it's all to do with players and...
Go on, let's hear it.
Di Maria. There he goes again. My, how can he assist you?
Football needs to be reset. Shut it down.
What's he doing there?
What's going on?
An Ipswich fan interviewing a Scum fan outside a West Ham Leeds game to sing a song about a Paris Saint-Germain player.
Yes, someone who hasn't played for Man United since, I just checked, 2015.
I mean, I don't mind people going to games. If you just want to go and watch a game of football and it's happening, and that's kind of what's happened at the London Stadium anyway. That's why it's the London Stadium. So tourists just accidentally buy tickets to the London football team and they end up watching bloody West Ham.
He does manage to speak to one actual West Ham fan in the middle.
There was one there, was there?
There was one there, an old boy with kind of gappy teeth. He looks like a proper West Ham fan. He looks like a...
Yeah, a chicken run.
Yeah, he does. He looks like
a... Puck.
He looks like a good
Alf Garnett.
A good old-fashioned
Bobby Moore.
Like he's smartly dressed, which I think is nice. But then, so he's managed to get one, but then I think playing it safe, having been maybe scarred by the fact he's spoken to a Scum fan, he goes to some people who are fully kitted out in West Ham gear.
The ultras.
And this is what they have to say.
Right, I'm here with three West Ham fans. Leeds today in the FA Cup. How are we feeling?
Excited.
Yeah? Excited? Yeah, yeah. What's the score going to be?
Cheers,
mate.
2-0.
2-0 to West Ham.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, no, 3-0.
3-0 West Ham. Right, one more question. We'll keep it short. I ask everyone this question. What's your favourite West Ham chant song?
Huh?
Favourite West Ham chant?
West Ham to like that!
No?
I don't know.
No, you don't want to do it?
We don't know.
Like player or something.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas.
Okay, yeah, fine.
Great.
I'm as confused as they are.
Yeah.
Bless them. I don't think they... Were they quite young? You've watched the video of this.
Not young.
Did it strike you as like first game types?
Probably, yeah. They're very obviously tourists who've bought, they've got half and half scarves on, they've kind of gone for the day.
Cheap tickets as well, with it being
the
FA Cup. It's more, they're probably as bemused by that guy.
Just thinking about it.
I don't mind people going to the first game and all that kind of stuff. I think dear old Mr. Griffin needs to maybe select more carefully,
you know,
because he's not got the real West Ham views.
Assuming we stay up this year, that we push the button on redeveloping Elland Road and we end up with a 55,000-60,000 seater or whatever, starting to think we shouldn't bother.
Keep it small.
Make it smaller.
Yeah, you need to show, you need to have proof of either past purchases or lineage, ideally. If you can prove like you've got family.
Just let's shave off 5,000-6,000 off the capacity, maybe cap it at 30,000, like when we won the league 30 years ago, and attendances can just hover around the high 20s and we don't have to have tourists in.
It's hard because
I don't want the revenue. I don't want to compete at the top of the Premier League. I'd quite happily let's go down.
I don't want people to not have an experience of a football game is the thing. It's hard, but I think also if you're in London and you want to go to a football match, don't go to West Ham because it looks obviously shit from the pictures. Go to Charlton or something. Just there are loads of good
but the Charlton
in London.
But Charlton have had the sofas in the past, but have they got a skating rink around the back of the
and they don't have a shopping centre next door. I think that's the thing with West Ham. It's a complete day out package. You can go shopping, you can go to the game, you can do all this.
Go to Nando's afterwards.
It's an integrated leisure experience.
That big slide as well, don't forget, next to it.
That's why this sort of thing happens, I would welcome anybody to an enlarged Elland Road. We just need to make sure there's room for that, nobody's replaced. So everybody, so that you can actually find a real Leeds fan within the vicinity of the stadium, and maybe also like rapid training course. Because there's a lot of new Premier League fans you've seen popping up. I remember reading Philemon Hay wrote about Darko Milanic on his Athletic website, and in the comments,
on his Athletic,
somebody said,
"The New York Times, we love you guys."
In the comments, somebody was saying, "Oh, I'm a recent Leeds fan. I knew nothing about any of this. That Cellino character sounds crazy." I was like, "So you realise people are new to this, and you want to kind of some kind of fast track education."
Almost like a citizenship test kind of thing, yeah. But for Leeds fans, and obviously better than the citizenship test, where you go through a brief history of what's happened, petty grievances, people you don't like, clubs you don't like, reasons for it. And once you've sort of read up on that, then you realize that maybe it acts as a gateway before you can go through the ticket website to buy tickets.
I want
probably
people to,
to be the other way around. You need to get them to go first and then enjoy the day out. And then you tell them, right, actually, do you want to know why this is, you've got involved in something terrible now. Wait until they're in.
Right.
Hook them and then hit them with the misery.
Like drugs.
Yeah, you need to, because if you tell people from the start what supporting Leeds is really like, then I spent most of the last decade, whenever people would say, oh, you're a football fan, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And it's, oh, yeah, I've been thinking of like maybe going to Elland Road for a game. Don't. Terrible. It'd be the worst decision you'd ever make getting into football. Whereas now we're in Premier League and all that, it's a different equation. So you can allow people to enjoy it, and then it's, you enrich their experience by pointing out all the reasons it's terrible.
Right, good. Anyway, back to...
That's the other thing about those happy hammers. They sounded far too happy. That's the thing.
You're not supposed, football's
they're
not
having a nice time.
Football is not a happy experience, is it, for the vast majority of the time?
And even it's misery. The scum fan as well. There's too much good cheer there. And maybe he's done it to get away from, you know, the misery that is Solskjaer Rangnick's terrible construction. So a day out at West Ham is just a blessed relief. Or it sounds more like he's actually blocked everything out that's happened at Old Trafford.
Do you think he's been to Old Trafford?
Di Maria left. Yeah, he's been a couple of times, so it's a treat.
I think the thing is, I don't mind tourists, but I feel like I want them to throw themselves into it a bit more.
Yeah, that's it. And maybe that was why I was wondering about if the last people were young and had that first game.
No, they were like mid-20s to the other thing, early 30s.
I mean, that's the other thing.
Pull up the drawbridge, smaller ground.
A Premier League ticket, especially in London, is horrendously overpriced. So an FA Cup match, which I assume the tickets were reduced for this, is the moment when you're going to attract people who are going, oh, I would love to go to every game because my room at home, you can't move for Julian Dick's Corinthian toys. This is the only opportunity I get to actually go to a match. I won a ticket to go and see Leeds play Leicester, and it was O'Leary's first game. And that was, a way of getting in. It wasn't a winner ticket. You got one with, if you subscribe to Leeds magazine, you got a free ticket to a game. And so I sat in the East Upper.
So we're blaming James Brown for this then?
I sat in the East Upper with an entire block to myself. Because that's how popular Leeds United were last time we were in the Premier League.
Because that's what you insisted upon.
Right, back to the clips then. And Alex Griffin, they were impressed by us. And that's the main thing, isn't it? That's the important thing to take from any of this.
Look, that just kicked off massively. All I'm going to say is Leeds fans were class. They were proper loud. But West Ham won 2-0. They're through to the next round. Okay.
Someone sticks around and goes, West Ham fans are shit. And he goes, yeah, okay.
Those are the people he needed to be interviewing, isn't he? If it's all kicking off and the hardcore are giving it Sam, get in there with your little microphone and your camera and have a chat to some of those boys and girls.
You can see where he was in the stadium. Actually, they put a still in, and you can see, because he was looking towards the Leeds fans, you can see just how shit that stadium does look again from this angle. When you can see the massive expanse, put the tourists in there.
Yeah,
if you fail the test, you have to watch the game from within the
behind a fence,
behind the roller rink of shame. You get a deck chair in the roller rink if you can't prove yourself to know.
You're allowed to watch it on telly, and they'll put some tellies in maybe. Or
if you can't identify a picture of Ludic McClosco, you get to watch the game from in there instead.
There are a couple of other actual West Ham fans, just to quickly wrap up, who were in the press. Rob wrote a blog highlighting that we always get bad press out of London off the back of a West Ham game. But The Guardian sent Jacob Steinberg, who is a West Ham fan, and so unsurprisingly, the adjectives used about Leeds are unkind.
Naive defending for the first goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, naive defending. And then, but it's, and also it made it sound like
the old,
West Ham.
The
were,
old naive offside.
West Ham were Brazil 1970 by the sound. This Michael, Declan Rice was always in charge in midfield. And Marcelo Bielsa's defenders spent most of the contest bouncing off Mikel Antonio, a barnstorming presence, who was still going deep in the added time, racing clear down the right to set up Jared Bowen's clean shot. And then Matt Law, who is at the Telegraph, who we know better as a Frank Lampard fan, was similarly gushing. And he wrote that it was no surprise that Leeds made a change at the break, sending on Rafinha to replace Sam Greenwood. The change did not make a lot of difference for Bielsa's team, who largely remained toothless after the restart. And just to go through, so according to him, Stuart Dallas, unused substitute on this. Older Louis Batty got a 5 out of 10, as Rob pointed out, probably marked down for a anonymous second half performance. But
he left precious Chelsea, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, we may as well not have bloody gone to read some of the London reporting on this.
And we get to do it all again next week. Great. Let's go into the wider world of propaganda now then. And what have we got?
Well, Michael? you mentioned
Rob. We got some feedback, didn't we?
You mentioned Rob there. He's angered a Burnley fan.
The Burnley fan who can write.
David, well, he can write a bit because he did try to send this feedback twice. The first one was just a blank email.
I mean, we've got his email address here. Should we read it out?
Let's not. he's called David. That'll do, won't it? Yeah. But there was an article about Charlie Taylor, which I must admit, when I got this email, I'd not actually read the article about Charlie Taylor. I assumed we'd been much harsher about him, but...
No, I mean...
It was fine.
David describes it as an article ridiculing Charlie Taylor, but our brother Rob did not ridicule Charlie Taylor. He just pointed out that he's not really got a lot better or worse than when he left Leeds, and now you feel like there's still some potential there, and the kind of the villainy accusations that follow him from Leeds fans, because he was booed at the game, wasn't he, because of not playing against Wigan. It's all feels a little bit unfair because he was young then, but it's all kind of, it just seems like you wonder what would have happened if a player who was one of Burnley's best attacking players on the day had actually gone to a club that, or played for a manager that values an attacking fullback, and how much more there might be for Charlie Taylor to
In other
to
words,
do.
Had he not gone to a shithole like Burnley.
Yeah, so it wasn't ridiculing Charlie Taylor.
Well, David wasn't happy anyway. He says, as a Burnley fan, reading the article ridiculing Charlie Taylor, you seem to find the bottle missing Charlie and it's in Matt Luton, quite funny. But I suppose that's your archetypal thick Leeds fan. No wonder the majority of football fans hate your club. Just can't wait to see your club implode again. Up the Clarets.
Thank you, David.
There he is. Do we want Burnley are going to implode, aren't they? That's the thing.
Yes, they'll be relegated long before we have, right?
Because they're probably going to be relegated, Deitchless, and then with some the crypto bros trying to sell NFTs of Charlie Taylor.
The reference to the bottle was, as Rob wrote, was Taylor sensibly ducked out of the way, instead feigning indignation at the crowd as if he hadn't been part of Leeds' team, subjected to even more vicious scorn from Elland Road's fans. So he's pointing out that Charlie Taylor probably had more metaphorical bottles thrown at him when he was an actual Leeds player during the dark years than anything that the Burnley player who was pretending to be hurt. I mean, it did hurt him, but it wasn't the player who was hit so much. It was his mate who was going, oh, go down, let's make a big deal out of this. And it's probably a bit of respect to Lawton in the end that he actually was like, no, I'm going to...
Even though you just called him Lawton when he's called Loughton.
But no...
Lawton.
No respect.
Loughtonet.
No respect to David.
Lawton.
No respect to David.
No respect to David.
Well, thank you for getting in touch. If you happen to be listening, David, which you're probably not, but thank you for getting in touch. We attempted to fire back a response like that. Was it that Bradford City fan who you replied to saying, thanks, we'll try not to cry?
Just deleted it.
Yeah.
Just couldn't be bothered. I thought I'll reply to it on this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you've got no right of reply.
I don't want to get into an exchange with him, do I?
Derek Redmond. Yeah, who got injured in Barcelona, the runner.
Yeah.
But it was in the same Olympic stadium that moved to Barcelona for that.
Yes, the 1992.
I am going to persist with that really, really.
His hamstring
joke,
suddenly tore, and then his dad came and helped him up the line.
And we're signing him as a striker in this window. Right, let's do something more about Burnley.
Yeah, just to stick with him, I thought we'd have a look at our relegation rivals, two of which managed to get a bit of an embarrassing defeat in the Cup. Burnley lost to Huddersfield, and so going back to Tolt Burnley. He was pretty down after we beat him, and it's not gone much better for him.
So we have Leicester next, then Arsenal. We also have Liverpool sometime soon, and Man United. We are fucking woeful. We are going down.
Good.
You can't go down in the cup.
No, but they are anyway. So yes. that's one relegation place taken up. That's good.
Yep.
I'm looking to Newcastle as well for the next one. They did,
do your duty, lads. Yep.
They were very much the leads of this round, weren't they? Losing at home to Cambridge. And they didn't rest players either. They did it with new signing in the team. Got rid of Steve Bruce. Obviously, that was holding them back. They've got rid of Mike Ashley.
Might be signing Chris Wood.
They might be signing Chris Wood or one of another dozen strikers. They're very much taking the approach of like just putting in bids for everyone, I think, because they need someone. But yeah, they managed to lose to Cambridge with a full strength side, which was funny. So Magpie TV here giving his verdict on Newcastle.
Willock is an absolute joke. He is so bad, man. What is going on with him? Does he need no fans? Do we want to go back to lockdown so Willock can play? How is he that bad? How is he that shit? Julian on the day, Pua, St. Maximin, Pua, no employment from anyone, no idea, no identity. It was just so painful to watch. Sellout game the day now, sellout game, freezing cold January. And we were that bad, we were so bad, so, so bad. Well, at least we're concentrating on getting relegated now, eh? Jesus.
At least he's having a laugh with it.
I don't think he is having a laugh, I think he's quite miserable, which is good because I didn't used to mind Newcastle, but frankly, they all deserve to go down now after being so delighted to be taken over by such bastards. So, or not, or an investment group, depending on which way you choose to.
It could be an investment group full of bastards.
That's also true. Yeah. But yeah, that's good. So they're both accepting their fate.
In our investment group, we've got LL Cool J. I happened to get some Spotify spat out some LL Cool J when I was driving in the way in this morning. I felt that was a nice little join up of brands, you know?
Very nice. But I think between Burnley and Newcastle, I mean, Norwich and Watford will accept going down anyway.
Norwich play in the FA Cup this week?
They did. They had a fortunate win against Charlton.
Okay. And I know Watford lost 4-1 to Leicester, so that's kind of...
Watford and Norwich know they're going down. They don't even care.
I mean, Watford aren't even in the relegation places yet, are they?
Yeah, but they're more than happy to go down. They'll volunteer for it if necessary at the end of the season. If we just say we don't want to, they'll go, it's fine.
I'm just trying to put a little bit of a optimistic light on our position because we have... four teams below us who were all convinced that they're going down and there's only three relegation places available anyway. So
leave them to fight it out, I say.
That's what I'm saying. We've already got Norwich and Watford, they'll go down anyway, it's fine. They're not even bothered. And then Burnley and Newcastle are both saying they're down too, so we're fine.
Yeah,
all four of them are down.
So that's the good.
Great.
That's the positive to take from the week.
That is the
it's been a great FA Cup weekend.
That's the high to end on. But this episode of Propaganda, we've got the main weekly show to do after this one, so look out for that.
Where the West Ham preview, eh?
Where we do Leeds United news, which we've got some actual Leeds United news, probably concerning injuries. We preview West Ham. Anything interesting to say about that?
Oi, etc.
And we will be picking the week's heroes and villains. So we'll see you across on your feed on that show in a bit. Look out for it.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.